Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, going to visit with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. I hope you'll check it out. He's also living in Tel Aviv right now, and right in the midst of all the chaos that's going on with regard to Hamas. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Well, let's start off with the topic of Israel and what's happening right now.
Okay, so for the moment, it seems to be a period of waiting, so to speak. The number of rockets that Hamas is able to fire has gone down considerably. They, by all estimates, are beginning to run through their arsenal, but still have some left to go. So here in Tel Aviv, it's been 48 hours since we've had the last rocket attack on Tel Aviv. Well, that doesn't mean we can't get one at any time. There was one at some other communities a little while ago. The ground forces are ready for their assault on Gaza. They have not done so as of yet. There are various theories as to why not, ranging from the fact that the Biden administration is asked to wait in order to try to arrange additional hostage releases, to the fact the army is trying to prepare in a better sort of way, to the fact that Netanyahu has been known to be someone who's always afraid to take decisive action. So those are the different possibilities. The Hamas did something intelligent on Friday night by releasing two hostages, two American hostages, and sort of giving like a taste. Here, you see what we can do? We can release two. But they have so many hostages, they could be releasing them for months or years, a little bit at a time. In the meantime, the 300,000 troops sitting around the borders waiting to assault. There's almost nobody in this country, with very few exceptions, that doesn't think that a ground assault, however terrible, is the only choice that Israel has at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There's the sense that there's no other way of eliminating Hamas's rule in Gaza, and there's no way to maintain a country at this point with Hamas in power.
So, Mark, just a couple of comments. First of all, I just wonder if it's not a strategic decision to delay the march into Palestine, into the territory, just to keep everybody on edge, perhaps people maybe letting down their guard after a while. I think it could serve the purpose of a strategic win.
Maybe, but there are two problems with that, of course. And the first concern is the troops can't stand there forever. Don't forget, we've mobilized all of our reserves, 350,000 men. They're not working, right?
Yeah.
And there are also 200,000 internal refugees, the 200,000 Israelis who have left their homes because it was not safe to be there.
Uh-huh.
So you're talking right there, 500,000 people in a country of 9 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't maintain this forever. I mean, yes, you can maintain another week, another 2 weeks, but keep in mind the operation itself is not going to be quick. So delaying it becomes problematic. It also becomes problematic having so many just troops in the field for such a long time waiting. It's not pleasant to be sitting, you know, you're a reservist, you're called up, you're not on a base, you're sitting basically, you know, out in the field waiting for movement. You can't go home for the weekends because you're in that situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. The other rumor that I'd heard or report is that with 360,000 troops, the Israelis are ill-equipped. They don't have all the equipment they need in order to engage.
No, that's a little bit of that was true in the first week or two, you know, the first week, because they called up everybody so quickly, and it was like 120% of the people called up showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't enough equipment. You know, in that first week, there wasn't enough of this. You know, in different places, there were shortages of different things, but that's basically all been sorted out at this point. There are no combat troops that aren't fully equipped for combat at this point.
Great.
So that's not so much the case.
Wonderful.
Look, there is the case, again, there's the hostages, and it becomes an impossible situation because the realization is once you start the ground assault, the only way to get the hostages out is by a rescue attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, the insertion of ground troops offers you all sorts of opportunities you might not have otherwise, because it'll be possible to find them, possibly, and be harder for Hamas to track whether you have people there and all those sort of things. On the other hand, Gaza is a myriad of tunnels underground, and I don't know that we know where, maybe you know where some of them are, but you don't know where all of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very dangerous thing. So people, you know, on one hand, there's a lot of pressure amongst the families of the hostages to do something. But to do something, what does that mean to do something? Because from what all I can tell, Hamas wants to string it out. They have no interest in solving the hostage situation. Even if they were to get all they wanted, and then what? Then they don't have hostages anymore, and Israel's free to attack.
Uh-huh.
So it's a difficult situation, however you want to look at it,
right?
Because you don't want to, you know, it's 200 hostages, 210 at this point, and there's still the 200 people who are unaccounted for. So either way, it's a bad choice. But you have to make the choice at some point, and that's really where the problem is. And then you have the second factor, which is, of course, Hezbollah in Lebanon, that has until now basically been annoying. I mean, annoying in sense it's killed a couple of soldiers in the course of its being annoying, but has made it so far clear that it's not interested in a full war with Israel. And Israel is showing that interested in that war, to be quite honest with you, it would be very costly, just because Hezbollah has 120,000 rockets and missiles, and many of them are long-range, and some of them are smart missiles, that while Israel may or may not have defenses to deflect them, some of them will clearly hit critical targets. And as fast as Israel can destroy all of Lebanon, it's not really, Israel doesn't want to destroy all of Lebanon, but it's made it clear that basically that's what it'll do if Hezbollah gets into a full war with us.
See, that's a point that I had not heard. You'd said that Lebanon or Hezbollah doesn't have an interest in engaging Israel in war. They're just these little skirmishes, or perhaps don't have anything to do with their intent. Can you clarify? I mean, it seems to me if they're
fighting... Yeah, so what they're trying to do is twofold. One is they're trying to take some of our eye off of Gaza. I mean, clearly, look, there's a question of how much of this is all directed from Iran, and Hezbollah directly gets its marching orders from Iran. The Hamas, a little bit less so, but they've got a lot of support from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that... But the Hezbollah also plays a different game, because it's a significant political player in Lebanon. Now, Lebanon itself has been in tremendous economic difficulties, mostly caused by Hezbollah in one way or another,
mm-hmm.
Especially when their warehouse of arms blew up, leveling part of the port two years ago. They never recovered from that.
Yeah.
But the Lebanese don't want to get dragged into a war, but if Hezbollah opens a war, then they'll be dragged into this war, which they don't want. But again, you know, there's the issue of, you know, who else is pulling the strings. Like I said, how much is Iran involved? On, I guess it was Friday night, the Houthis, which is the Shiite Iranian-backed group in Yemen, fired 4 missiles and 14 unmanned aircraft aimed mostly at Israel, but possibly at Saudi Arabia as well, and at some American targets, all simultaneously.
Hmm.
And primarily a U.S. Navy destroyer in the Red Sea downed almost all of them, but I think the Saudi Arabian air defense downed a few as well. So you have the Houthis directed by Iran trying to, and they've admitted the fact they were firing at Israel.
So are the Houthis funded by Iran as well?
Yes, absolutely funded by Iran. They're totally are a Shiite group, totally funded by Iran. Huh. They've been having a civil war within Yemen, backed by the central government, which has been supported by Saudi Arabia.
So the head of the Hydra here happens to be Iran. You know.
Yes, it's clearly the head of the Hydra. There's no question about it. You know, like the single biggest mistake that President Bush did was he went into Iraq instead of Iran.
Yeah.
But that's ancient history at this point. Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
I should mention also that American bases in Iraq and Syria have been attacked in the last couple of days by Iranian-backed militants. So it's gotten complicated, to say the least.
Can this spread into a regional war?
Yes, it could. I mean, it depends on what you define as regional war, obviously. I mean, if Hezbollah starts, you know, getting deeply involved, then it becomes a regional war.
Yeah.
Will Iran get involved directly? Look, the U.S. has presented a pretty powerful deterrent at this point. And while it's not clear the U.S. will intervene if Hezbollah intervenes, but it's sort of threatened to, but it's made it explicit that if Iran gets directly involved, then the United States will intervene. And U.S. has a tremendous amount of firepower at this point in the area, with more even on the way.
Right.
President Biden was here on Wednesday, I think it was, and he did quite well, giving a bunch of speeches that were very well received by the Israeli public, and being the one thing that everyone agrees he does very well, being very empathetic. And he met with the families of the hostages and some of the survivors of the attack, and he played empathetic in chief quite well. And
so, Mark, we need to just take a little break. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matt Chionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310.
Do you have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise private wealth advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by Gulf Shore Playhouse, changing lives through exceptional theater experiences. And you can find out more and get tickets to some great performances coming up. The website is gulfshoreplayhouse.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Middlemore. He is the editor-at-large for the fee.org. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Mark is in Tel Aviv. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
So, Mark, any thoughts or concluding comments before we move on to other things that are going on in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big question right now is when the ground assault will begin. I think there's no question it will happen, but when it will happen, and is there any chance of Hamas releasing an additional hostages? It's unclear. This will become clear the next day or two, because the situation can't remain static forever.
And one additional question, though. Apparently, Egypt is not offering the opportunity for people to come into Palestinians to come into Egypt. But what is the solution to the citizens of the Palestine territory?
Really, that's the problem. The problem of Gaza has been an ongoing problem since the very beginning. The Gaza residents, a lot of them were original refugees from the 1948 war. When Israel signed a peace agreement with Egypt, with Sadat in 79, he did not want the Gaza Strip back. Israel was happy to give it to him, but he did not want it back because he didn't want to deal with it. So it's an almost an intractable problem. I mean, look, what Gaza needs, Israel pulled out of Gaza and got Hamas. What Gaza needs is a forward-looking government that's willing to care for its people and instead of building rockets, build factories.
Right.
You know, hopefully, the one hope of all of this is if Hamas has always been the group that has tried to stop peace all the way through, from the period of time all the way back when Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. They engaged in a whole bunch of terrorist activities immediately afterwards, which doomed the candidacy of Shimon Peres, who was, you know, following in Rabin's legacy. He was defeated by Netanyahu, uh-huh. who was a right winger at the time, because of the because of all of the bombings that the Hamas took part in. And so, from all the way back then, they've done everything they can to stop the peace process, because that's what they don't want is peace. So if they can be removed, maybe there'll be a chance to making progress, but it'll take a number of years. It'll take a while for the pain of what took place here in 2 weeks ago to dull a little bit and people to be ready to make peace, because it's not easy at this point.
It's going to take some leadership on the part of the Palestinian people to...
Right, we need some leadership there. We absolutely need some leadership, a new generation of leaders. There's no sign of that.
Right.
And that's what part of the problem. So
Mark, the situation in Israel's sucked a lot of the energy into the news cycle, but we still have this issue of Ukraine and Russia. Can you give us an update?
Sure. So the Ukrainians have made progress in one area. But it's so slow. They make very, very slow incremental progress. What they have made more progress in, actually, is their long-range attack, both by using American missiles and commando raids in Crimea, so much to the fact that by making Crimea a very difficult place for the Russian fleet, the Ukrainians have actually regained control of much of the Black Sea.
Hmm.
And so they're able to send their ships with grain to the Black Sea because the Russians have been forced to withdraw.
Hmm.
So that's been a big area of progress. The Russians have tried an offensive in the north, and the Russians, keep on throwing more and more men at this offensive, and the Ukrainians basically keep on killing them. They make no progress, and they lose probably 1,000 or 2,000 men in the last couple of days in their attempt at some sort of offensive. So it's not a stalemate, but things moving very slowly. They're holding them back, and they're making slow but steady progress against the Russians, but it's slow. It's slow going. Offensive operations are much more difficult than defensive operations.
It kind of also raises the issues about the regional partnerships that are going on, Russia and China. And
North Korea and Iran. I mean, it's with some involvement of the Chinese.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's clearly, look, they used to talk about the axis of evil, which was Iran, North Korea, and I forgot who the third country was. I guess it was Iraq. I think that was the axis of evil. Well, now we have a clear axis of evil, which is Russia, North Korea, and Iran.
Yeah.
A clear axis of evil. And it's up to the United States to lead the Western world, which it's done relatively well. Europe has woken up. There's no question Europe is spending way much more on defense than they ever did before. NATO is a much more active force than it's been, but it's a long time in coming.
Absolutely. What's going on in Australia?
Australia was an interesting case where there was a referendum to give the indigenous Australians, in other words, the equivalent of the Australian Indians, the people who were there before, the Aborigines, before it was settled, a special status in the Australian Parliament and constitutionally give them a special status. And it was rejected overwhelmingly in a vote. So direction of solving the problem has disappeared. It's going to leave a lot of unhappy people, but that's what the Australian people decided to do, so we'll see where that goes.
Sounds like a good decision.
I can't give an opinion on it because I don't really know all the... I mean, I followed it a little bit, but again, I'm not Australian, and I didn't follow all the internal details, but there was a lot of pluses and minuses, let's put it that way.
Absolutely. So. Again, Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCenter.com. Really check out the website. Mark also publishes his books on that website. They're available. Rich with history, and I encourage you to visit HistoryCentral.com. Mark, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Middlemore. He is the editor-at-large for FEE.org. It's the very robust website for the Foundation for Economic Education. We're going to do that and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.